So I'm going to talk about functional reality for the classical groups. And actually, for those that have been here for the term, they know that I talked about this in some sense last Thursday, so maybe this is really beyond functional reality, but we won't worry about that. So K is going to be a number field. I'll get this stuff out of the way in the beginning, otherwise I'll forget. A, it's ring of Adele. And I'm going to fix a character, an additive character, which will show up at some point, and if I don't do it now, I will never do it. So fixed additive character, non-trivial. So functional reality. So fairly recently, with Henry and P.S. and Shahidi, we have established functional reality for the, from the split classical groups to GLN. So let me explain what I mean by this. So GN is going to be a split classical group of rank, N. And really, it's going to be one of the, by this I mean the following. Either it's going to be an SO2N plus 1 or an SO2N with respect to the skew diagonal form. So that's a nice split form. Or it will be a symplectic group. And this is also with respect to the skew form, minus phi n. So this is just for definiteness. That's the form that I take the symplectic group with respect to. The only advantage of these is that the Borel subgroup I can now take to be upper triangular matrices if I need it. Now, for each one of these groups, there is a natural embedding of its L group into the L group of GLN. So for each one, there's a natural embedding. And since these are split, for me, the L group is just the connected component, so it's the dual group, into an appropriate GLN. And so, let's see. Here's the usual chart. So let's see, if I have SO2N plus 1, its dual group is SO2NC, and that embeds in GL2NC. So the GLN is GL2N. If I have an even orthogonal group, whoops, what did I do? Thank you. Yes, the dual of that is SP. The even orthogonal groups are self-dual. And then I have for the symplectic group, well, its dual is SO2N plus 1. C, that embeds into GL2N plus 1C. And then Langlands' principle of functional reality says, associated to such a map of L groups, I should have a lifting or a transfer of, if I'm talking globally, I should be able to transfer automorphic representations of these groups to automorphic representations of these groups. And this is what we have established. So here is the theorem. And so it says, let pi be a globally generic cuspidal representation of my classical group. Then pi has a functorial lift or transfer to an automorphic representation, capital Pi, of GLN, where the associated N is from this table. And what I mean by this, so more precisely, there exists a finite set, and actually in our proof, it's a finite places, S of my field, such that for all V not in S, the local component of the GLN representation is the local functorial lift of the local component of the classical group representation given by the local Langlands, so let's say local Langlands parameterization. So let me draw you the picture. So if I take a place, either an Archimedean place or a finite place where this representation is unramified, then we know either from Langlands or from the Satake classification that this is associated to an admissible homomorphism of the Vedeline group into the L group. Okay? And we know this at almost all places. We know this except the places where I'm ramified. And then if I combine this with the embedding, then I get an admissible parameter here. And then by local Langlands for GLN, I have a bijection, and so this gives me a representation of GL capital N. So that's what I mean by local functoriality given by the Langlands parameterization. So this is either Langlands, if V divides infinity, and Satake, if pi V is unramified, V finite, and this is Harris, Taylor, or somewhat simplified by Hamyar. So this is functoriality itself. And this is, as I said, this is what we proved with Henry, Kim, and P.S. and Shahidi. And we did this by combining the converse theorem for GLN, which is an integral representation technique that requires control of the L functions, and we control the L functions on the classical group using the Langlands-Shahidi method, using Fourier coefficients of Eisenstein series. So that's what we did here. So I'm not going to talk about this theorem in itself. Many of you have heard me talk about this in the past. Some of you haven't, but there it is. But one of the things that supposedly one can do from functoriality is take facts that you know about automorphic forms on these groups and pull them back to facts about automorphic forms on these groups. Okay? And so what I really want to talk about is what do we now know about automorphic forms here that we didn't know before? Okay? So that's what I really want to talk about, are sort of some of the consequences for the classical groups coming from this. Now, as it turns out, they don't only come from this. Another important ingredient is the descent theory. This is due to Ginsburg, Rawlis, and Soudry. And what it does, as functoriality goes from here to here, the descent theory goes back the other way. And so let me explain their theory of descent for you for just a minute. So let me take, as an example, let me take Gn to be SO2n plus 1, and so GLn is GL2n. Although what I'm going to tell you is I'll indicate holds in all the rest of the cases. And let me begin with pi. This is going to be a self-dual cuspidal representation of GL. What am I doing? That's too little n. So GL too little n. And it's going to wind up having trivial central characters, so I might as well say that in the beginning. So trivial central character. Now, the descent method is also a method involving Fourier coefficients of Eisenstein series. It's actually very, very similar to the Langlands-Shahidi method in some sense. And so I'm going to create an Eisenstein series, so I'm going to have a bigger group. My bigger group here is going to be SO4N. Okay? This has in it a Ziegle parabolic. And so the Levy is GL2N, where my cuspal representation lives on. And we can form the induced representation, which I will call I pi s, and this is just the induced from the Ziegle parabolic up to this large even orthogonal group of pi twisted by absolute value determinant to the s minus a half. Okay? And then for every sort of function in the space of this representation, we can form, as usual, an Eisenstein series. So I'm going to denote it this way, even though the S is really part of my section here. Let's don't worry about that. So this is an Eisenstein series on this large even orthogonal group. Okay? Now, I'm looking for descent back to SO2N plus 1, so I need to somehow get something on SO2N plus 1 out of this. And so what we do then, what they do, is in the following. So H also has a parabolic. I'll call it P prime. Standard, so it's upper triangular. With Levy, a certain number of copies of GL1, n minus 1 of them, and if I pull off n minus 1 copies of GL1, what I'm left with is an SO2n plus 2. Okay? So there is such a Levy in there. If you like, in terms of this form, what I've done is this would be 4n, I've pulled off a bunch of little GL1s here, and I've got a SO2n plus 2 sitting in the middle. So it has such a parabolic. And there is a character psi prime of the unipotent. So let me say n prime k. It's an automorphic character. Okay, it's really an extension somehow of the original character that I had, such that if you look at the stabilizer in the Levy of this character, right, the Levy always acts on the unipotent by conjugation. And if I look at the stabilizer of the character on the unipotent in the Levy, it wipes out this, so it sort of looks like a generic character here, and it knocks the rank of this down by 1. So this is SO2n plus 1. Okay? So if I take this and I compute the corresponding Fourier coefficient of this Eisenstein series, okay? So let me, if we compute this Fourier coefficient, then it's most naturally, it's going to be most naturally a function on the stabilizer of this coefficient in the in the what? in the levy and in prime. So if we compute this Fourier coefficient, we form E psi prime SF G. So this is just the integral SF N prime G psi prime. I think I want an inverse. N prime k mod n prime a, then this is naturally an automorphic form on SO2n plus 1, or my classical group. Okay, so I've started with something on GL2n. I've gone up to an Eisenstein series on SO4n. I've taken a Fourier coefficient to come back down, and I've gotten myself back down to my classical group. Okay? Now, once I have an automorphic, a space of automorphic forms here, we can then, if pi d pi is any cuspidal representation of the auto-orthogonal group, we can pair it with these Fourier coefficients. Oh, and I should point out, these are this particular type of Fourier coefficient. You know, if you take a Fourier coefficient with respect to the maximal unipotent radical, that's usually called a Whitaker model or a Whitaker coefficient. These they refer to as Gelfand Gryev coefficients. So it's not a Whitaker coefficient because it's got that big SO2n plus 1 in the stabilizer. It's a degenerate coefficient of some sort. Then what they show is the following. If I look at, so let's see, we can pair it. So if I take a cusp form from here, I can pair the cusp form with the coefficient of this Eisenstein series, and this just looks like a Peterson product, if you like. I'm just integrating the cusp form against the Fourier coefficient of the Eisenstein series. Then what they show is that up to some sort of controllable factors, what this thing computes is you get the partial L function, so I leave out a finite set of places, of pi, small pi twisted by large pi divided by 2s large pi wedge 2. Okay? So it says that when I compute this pairing, what I get, so I get this, so it's actually the pairing is identically zero unless my cuspidal representation is globally generic, it turns out. But if it is globally generic, then this computes the twisted L function divided by the exterior square of GL. So this is another, again, this is, they actually view this as being sort of part of a continuum that starts with the Langlands-Shahidi method on one end, which then controls L functions via Fourier coefficients of Eisenstein series. And then this essentially does the same thing. Here I've taken a Fourier coefficient of an Eisenstein series, and through this pairing I've gotten this twisted L function. Okay? So this is on the classical group, and this is on GLN. Okay? And this is on, in this case, this is GL2n, this is SO2n plus 1. So this is the right side. I mean, this is the right group for this thing to functorial lift to here. Okay? And now what they observe is the following. Well, so it's partially an observation and partially, let's see, actually maybe, no, I guess this direction, everything is an observation. So we can now observe the following. Well, they're not junk constants, but there's, so outside of a finite set of places, which is what T is, this integral. So this will unfold into a product of local integrals. And outside of a finite set of places, those local integrals compute this ratio of L functions. And then there's something here that's a product over V and T of stuff, which of course has to be controlled. But the point is that you're getting the L function out here. So, and then they make the following observation. Well, if I look at this, the condition for this to have a pole at S equals 1 is what? Well, if this has a pole at S equals 1, that's essentially saying that this is the functorial lift of this. Okay? The condition for this to have a pole at S equals 1 is that capital Pi is the functorial lift of little pi. Okay? So I've got an L function condition for recognizing when something's a functorial lift. Okay. But if you look at this formula says, well, if this has a pole, right, this is in the realm of absolute convergence, so this is no problem. If this has a pole at S equals 1 with a non-zero residue, that non-zero residue is somehow coming from this pairing. Okay? So this can have a pole at S equals 1 if pi has a non-trivial pairing with the space of residues. And this is on G. Okay? Because that's what the left-hand side computes. Okay? But that means this can happen. This implies that these residues, well, sorry, it says that these coefficients have a pole at S equals 1, but these are coefficients of Eisenstein series. So this says that the Eisenstein series itself has a pole at S equals 1. And what this is, right, if you do the constant term computation, the Eisenstein series has a pole at 1. This happens if LS, partial L function, capital Pi, wedge 2, exterior square, has a pole at 1. Okay. Now, if you run this set of inequalities backwards, okay, and I'm not saying that comes for free, that's work, but if you run this set of inequalities backwards, you start off with a self-dual representation whose exterior square has a pole at 1, and you get a condition, and you sort of, that's a condition for small pi to be a lift, but it also gives you the condition that small pi must pair with this set of residues. So in other words, this set of residues is a good candidate for a representation on SO2 n plus 1 that functorial lifts to pi. And that's what they prove. So here's the theorem. So running this backwards, I should say that this is non-trivial, you obtain the following theorem, and this is the descent. It says, let pi be a self-dual cuspidal representation of GL2NA with central character, trivial central character. Suppose that the partial L function exterior square has a pole at s equals 1, and then you let small pi prime of capital Pi be the span of this space of residues. Residues at s equals 1 of the Fourier coefficients of these Eisenstein series, where f now, remember, this lies in the representation that's induced from pi. So that is the connection with capital Pi. And then they prove a number of things. The first thing that they prove is that this is not zero. They prove that it's cuspidal, but this is, I should warn you, this is, if you were in the course, my course, this, they do not mean irreducible cuspidal. They just mean that as a space of functions, this occurs in the space of cusp forms. Okay? It's globally generic. It's cuspidal, so it'll break up into components. So each constituent is globally generic. There's no reason to crowd. I've got plenty of boards. Each constituent functorially lifts to pi. I'm missing something. Globally generic, functorial lifts to pi. Oh, it's multiplicity 1. So it breaks up into a finite number of pieces, and they're all distinct. They're all non-isomorphic. And finally, if pi is a globally generic representation of the classical group, which lifts to the representation on GL2N that I started with, then pi has a non-trivial invariant pairing with this descended representation. Okay? So in other words, everything that could possibly, if it's generic and it could possibly lift to pi functorially, then it is a constituent of this space of residues. Okay? So I've gone back, I've now descended. I started with something on GL2NA, and I've produced something back down on the classical group, which contains everything that would then functorially lift up. So I've descended down, if you like. So it means, if I understand, it means that each... Yeah, so each, you break it up into pieces, and each one of those are, there, no two of them are isomorphic, abstractly.
Is that related, or that's not the same thing as it occurring in multiplicity 1?
No. In fact, that's what I meant. Multiplicity free, how's that? Okay, sorry. Actually, I don't remember what they said. And then, of course, the conjecture is that this descended representation is irreducible. And hence, cuspidal and the only representation, well, the only generic representation, at least up to isomorphism, which lifts to capital pi. Okay. Now, I've presented this here for the the odd orthogonal groups, but they have a similar theory. I mean, the theory works in all of our cases plus others. Yes? It's predicted that if you're a lift, then the exterior square should have a pole. Okay, you can work that on the Galois side if you want. Yeah. Okay, so there's a similar theory for all our cases plus others. But let me just give you what the thing looks like for ours. So here's my GLN, then I'm going to descend down to my classical group. Here is my larger group, and here is the L function condition that's to have a pole at 1. So the one that I just described is descending from GL2n to SO2n plus 1. I had to have an Eisenstein series on SO4n, and my L function condition involved the exterior square. If I wanted to descend from GL2n to SO2n, I have to have an Eisenstein series on SO4n plus 1. Note the parity flip here. And the L function condition is now symmetric square. And if I wanted to descend from GL2n plus 1 down to SP2n, I have to use an Eisenstein series on SP4n plus 2, twofold cover. So this involves a metaplectic group. And the L function condition of a pole at 1 is still the symmetric square. Okay, and these are as predicted. This is what they should be. Okay. Now, one thing that you can get out of this, so one thing that they did not have was a way to take a generic cuspidal representation of one of the classical groups and go up to GL2n. They could come down. Okay? And they knew that everything that could possibly lift occurred in their descent, but they couldn't take everything and go up with it. So if you combine the existence of functoriality going up and descent going down, then you can actually characterize the image of functoriality. So this, and now to characterize the image, they didn't need to know that functorially, I mean, they knew they had constructed things that did functorially lift. So they knew that these were the only things that could occur. So here's the theorem on the characterization of the image. The image of functoriality. So let's see, suppose small pi is a globally generic. Whenever I write generic for cuspidal representation, it's going to mean globally generic. In case I forget, cuspidal representation of one of these classical groups. Let capital pi be a functorial lift to the appropriate general linear group. Then capital pi is self-dual. Central character 1, trivial, of the form. Well, what I've described is sort of what happens when pi is, when the lift would be cuspidal, but the lift may not be cuspidal, but it will always be a full induced, a full irreducible induced. What did I do? Pi 1 up to pi d. And since it's irreducible, I'm going to write this as isobaric sum, such that each piece, I didn't need that there. Such that each pi I is a self-dual cuspidal representation of an appropriate GLNI with that, whatever the appropriate L function is, so either exterior square or symmetric square, such that this has a pole at 1. Okay. Moreover, all such things occur as a lift. So we actually know completely what the image of functoriality is due to this ability to both go up and come back down. Okay? And I should point out that, so I can sort of tell when it's cuspidal, when it's not, but it's always either cuspidal or an isobaric sum of cuspidals. And so since we have strong multiplicity 1 for isobaric representations on GLN, basically it says that the image of the lift is completely determined by knowing locally what the lift is at a finite number of places. So even though in functoriality we left out a finite number of places in the statement of it, this basically says, once I know the image looks like this, then what's filled in at the other places is forced. Okay? So everything is completely determined by the places that we could locally control it. Okay. Now, so I'm supposed to be talking about how I can take things on GLN and pull them back to the classical groups. So here's one of the first things you can pull back. And these are Ramanujan-type bounds. So here's the theorem. So let pi be a generic cuspidal representation of one of my classical groups, then at the places V, where pi V is unramified, its Satake parameters. And so this is going to be, I think, n complex numbers, I1 V down to alpha n V satisfy. Well, what do they satisfy? I take my globally generic cusp form, I lift it to GL capital N, and its parameters then give me parameters of my lifted representation. On GLN, I've got bounds towards Ramanujan, and I can pull them back. And the worst bounds I get is when actually pi itself is cuspidal, because the bounds depend on sort of the rank of the GLN. But if you just pull back the bounds from GLN, you get that the Satake parameters satisfy QV to the 1 half minus 1 over n squared plus 1, and that capital N is the one that I'm lifting to. So that's the bound on, that's I think the, still the best bound on GLN over a number field. Okay, so that's a global consequence. And I don't really, and I don't know that there were any bounds towards Ramanujan on these classical groups in this generality before. But I don't really know, if you want to know the truth. But this is, as far as I know, these are the first ones. Okay. Now, I don't know. Don't know. I mean, hadn't thought about it. Philippe thinks it has applications to some equidistribution problems. See, and he'll talk about that this afternoon, won't you?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, did I leave off an epsilon? I'm not sure. Okay, so this is... Philippe? Okay. All right. Okay. And this, again, this is just, this is sort of what my theme is supposed to be, taking something I know on GL, on a general linear group, and pulling it back to the classical. Now, as it turns out, the thing we need a little bit more, there's one other thing, result, sort of, it's not really one of the descent results, but it's sort of, again, it's pulling something back from GLN to the classical groups, and it turns out to be very powerful, and this is the so-called local converse theorem. And this is Jang and Sudri. And now this, unfortunately, now I have to restrict to GN equals SO2N plus 1. And right now I think this is still a real restriction. So in other words, what I'm saying from now on I think only holds in this case, but it should hold in general. I'll try to tell you why. And now let me take V, a p-adic place. Okay. Then the local converse theorem says the following. Okay. It says, let's let pi 1v and pi 2v be two generic, irreducible, admissible, generic representations of the auto-orthogonal group. Suppose that for every supercuspidal representation pi v prime of a general linear group, and I do this for d between 1 and n minus 1, so this should look, for those that have been coming to my course, this should look like a familiar range. And suppose that for every supercuspidal representation of a smaller GL, we have that the twisted gamma factors agree. So gamma is it's a ratio of L's and epsilon. So this is an L, sort of a local L function criterion. But if these twisted gammas are equal for all these twists up to n minus 1, so the rank of the place you're, so this I guess is 2n minus 1, 2 little n minus 1, then the conclusion is that in fact these are the same representation. Okay? So it's a, if you like, it's an L function criterion for recognizing when two representations are the same on the odd orthogonal group. Okay. This turns out to be extremely powerful. So, so one word about the proof. So I'm talking about pulling things back from GLN. If I replace the odd orthogonal group with GLN or GL2N, this is a result of Hignard. Okay? It's a result of Hignard. It was formulated a long time ago by Jacques Haypies and Schleicher, but they never saw fit to write down a proof. So Hignard wrote down a proof, and it basically said that the L function criteria that you write down in the local Langlands conjecture for GLN completely determined the correspondence. So this, for GL, this is a theorem of Hignard. And the way that these guys proved it was they did the following, roughly. Take SO2N plus 1, right? That's where the representations live. You embed the thing globally, and then you use global functoriality. So you have to use the global functoriality to go up to GL2N. Okay. This is where you have Hignard's result locally. Okay? And so now what I want to do is somehow descend it, and then, so this is where Hignard, but, so the natural thing to do would then be sort of to descend it back down using local descent, but it's just a historical fact that they did not, they worked out global descent for all the cases. Local descent, they had actually only worked out in one. And that was the global local descent to the twofold cover of SP. So that's not one of the cases that I've given you, but that's one of the cases they could do. And then they came across here using local theta correspondence. But I think it was only because this was the only place they had worked out local descent sufficiently. What you really want to do is locally descend back to here. And it's, as far as I know, once local descent is worked out for the other classical groups, you should have a similar theorem for them. And you really shouldn't. This is sort of a historical anomaly. That's just the one case where they had worked out local descent. So anyway, that's what their proof sort of looks like. It does use a global functoriality, see? So that's just to point out that we're not useless. Now, here's some things that you can now get out of with this. So this is a pullback of a result from GL to this particular classical group. One thing that you get out of this is that in the descent method, that representation that I call pi, the descended representation from pi back to GL, this is irreducible. Okay, and as I noted when I wrote down that conjecture that this was irreducible, that once I knew that this was irreducible, it was the only representation that could lift. So this is a global statement. It was the only representation that could lift up to pi. So the generic functoriality from SO2n plus 1 to GL2n is injective. And I'm going to say up to isomorphism. For now, I can't say anything about multiplicities. But anything that lifts functorial of the pi is isomorphic to this descended representation. Okay? And now, once you know that, okay, once you know it's injective, then you can pull back more things. So another global fact that we know about GLN that I already mentioned over here is you have strong multiplicity 1. So I should be able to pull back some version of strong multiplicity 1. Now, if you were in the course, when we proved strong multiplicity 1, if you remember what we did, we first proved that two representations were isomorphic, and once we had they were isomorphic, we said multiplicity 1 tells me that they're equal. So I can't quite do that because I don't have multiplicity 1, but I still can prove that if two, I can prove a version of strong multiplicity 1, and they call this rigidity. And it says if pi 1 and pi 2 are two cuspidal generic representations of the odd orthogonal group, such that, and these are irreducible, now cuspidal means back to meaning irreducible. For me, cuspidals are irreducible. This is globally generic. Such that pi 1v is isomorphic to pi 2v for, and I'm just going to say almost all places. So all but a finite number. Although, if you have density results on GL, you can pull those back just as well, because I'm really just pulling it back using this injectivity. So let me just take this one. If I know they're isomorphic, locally isomorphic for almost all V, then they're isomorphic at all places. So that's strong multiplicity 1, or some version of it. It says if I know two of these globally generic cuspidal representations of the odd orthogonal group and they're equivalent almost everywhere, then they are equivalent everywhere. So it fills in those other places. All right. But the most, to my mind, the most striking results that have been pulled back are, this is really saying, if you think about this, it says if you know something almost everywhere, you know it everywhere. And in particular, I can take a representation that I may not know anything about, embed it in a globally cuspidal one, lift it, right? I know what's going on up there, and maybe I can pull something back locally now. And so they're able to pull back the following two local things. They're able to extend functoriality to those places where we didn't know it. Okay? And then once you can do that, you know sort of Langlands parameters on GLN, you can pull back Langlands parameters. So they were able to prove the following. So local functoriality for SO2N plus 1. So let's see. So let's let A0G be the set of irreducible, admissible, generic, supercuspidal representations of SO2N plus 1 up to isomorphism. And let me let AL, this is going to be a set of representations on GLN. So this is a set of representations, pi, irreducible, admissible representation of GL2N, such that they're of the form pi, well, let me put my place in since I am being local. Pi V is isomorphic to an induced from pi 1 V. Pi d b such that each pi I v is supercuspidal with the corresponding local L function having a pole at S equals 0. And oh, I forgot to say something up here. I'm sorry. I should point out here that no two of these things are isomorphic. That helps give me irreducibility here. And there's the same condition here. No two of these are isomorphic. So this is just a local version of that, is what I'm attempting to write down here. And then, all right, I can get rid of this. Let's see, did I leave anything out? I think if I put enough conditions up here, they are. It does force it, but. They're all self-dual. Yeah, each one will have trivial central character because of this. Okay, all right. Good. Then, there exists a bijection. And let's see, which way did I write this? A0G, and this is on SO2N plus 1, to this AL is for lift, such that, and that my naturality conditions are going to be for all super cuspidal representations of GLD, so we'll call them pi prime V, that this correspondence, I need to give it a name. So let me say pi goes to capital pi, which will be capital pi, doesn't matter. That LS, this preserves, again, it preserves twisted L and epsilon. So that's the naturality. So twisted epsilon with everything on GL. And then with work, they subsequently extended this. So there are also subsequent extensions to, and let me just say, AG. So just a generic, irreducible generic representation. So they know local Langlands for generic representations of the outer orthogonal. Okay? Local functoriality. Not in the sense of the diagram, but in the sense of controlling L and epsilon. Okay? But the diagram should give you control of L and epsilon. And so, once you have this, then the goal is to pull back the Bay parameters, the Galois parameters for GL to the odd orthogonal group. So they also get local Langlands for p-adic SO2N plus 1. And so here they said let phi, let me try to make my notations consistent. This is going to be the set of all speak to me row mapping the Vey group to, well, let's see, the dual group of SO2N plus 1 is a symplectic group such that rho V is completely reducible, multiplicity free, do I need anything else? Speak to me. Thank you. Admissible. Then there exists a bijection from these are the parameters for SO2N plus 1. With the supercuspidal generic representations such that for all phi v mapping the Vey group into any GLD of C, so you should think of this as a parameter for a supercuspidal of GLD, you get equality of L and epsilon. So one has L, S on the Galois side, you have rho V tensor phi V, and that's L, S of pi. Well, hopefully you can figure out what my notation means. Okay, so this is, I can write it this way. This is the thing parameterized by rho, and this is the thing on GL parameterized by phi and epsilon. And then, again, subsequently, this was also extended to all generics. So in other words, they know the local Langlands conjecture for generic representations. Mm-hmm. Of course. And there are other results in these things. One of the things you can get out of this is, for example, every local temperate L packet has a unique generic member, things like this, other things one might be interested in. But these, I think, are sort of, they're all quite representative of things that one would want to be able to pull back from GL to the classical groups using functoriality. I mean, they're all examples of those, and they're, I mean, none of them came for free. There was always, you always have to do more work. But these are the results. And I think, true to form, I've not finished on time, but at least today Davidson took part of my time, so I'm not... I don't feel so bad.